Pickaxe.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello and welcome back to The Review of Death, your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews. I'm Matthew Toffolo, and today I'm joined by Sylvester McCoy. No, it's Jonathan Toffolo, my brother, who is kindly filling in for Billy Garrett John, who is still in New Zealand, the lucky bugger. Jonathan, hello.
Hello. Do you know Garonwe by any chance?
Do I know Garonwe?
Because I've got a penchant for honey. That's why I'm here today.
Right, lovely. I should have seen if we had any honey in the kitchen before we started. We probably do somewhere. Hello.
Hello.
So for those who are listening on audio, I'm sorry again that you have to try and decipher which one of us is which. But for those of you watching on video, I think it's blatantly obvious who is who, because Jonathan's come dressed as Sylvester McCoy, your favourite Doctor.
Absolutely.
Your favourite Doctor.
Absolutely.
In your very snazzy outfit.
Thank you.
Very well done, very authentic.
Thank you.
Authentic to the point of this is, in fact, a screen-used handkerchief.
This is.
That is the real McCoy,
as it were. The real McCoy, absolutely, yeah. Screen used.
So why have you decided to come in dressed like Sylvester McCoy?
Because you told me to.
Yeah.
Simply, I wouldn't have done it otherwise. You just said, do it. So
that's not 100% true.
Oh, isn't it? Oh, okay.
No, because when we decided the story on which we're going to be talking about today, you did turn around to me and say, should I get dressed up as Sylvester McCoy?
Really?
Yeah. I said, oh, yeah, that'd be funny. And then when I posted it on Twitter, and then you asked to get... Oh, and I said, you've got to do it.
Yes.
You were like, oh.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I forgot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm quite happy to, you know.
Any opportunity for him to get dressed up as Sylvester McCoy, he will do it. Unfortunately, there's nobody in the office with us today.
Or fortunately, as the case may be.
Oh, well, fortunately for you, unfortunately for me, because I was really hoping that someone would come in and see him in the full regalia and think, what's this bloody lunatic doing? or maybe they wouldn't bat an eyelid in this office, you never know.
No, hopefully not.
So, you're dressed as Sylvester McCoy, so what story are we talking about today?
Well, I've already given you a clue.
You've already given us a clue, yeah. So we're talking about Delta and the Bannerman. Third story from season 24, Sylvester McCoy's first season.
Absolutely.
Which was from 1987, wasn't
Correct.
It?
Correct.
That was the year you became a Doctor Who fan.
I was 4 years old.
4 years old. So what time of year would this have been on?
It would have been winter time, November-ish.
Okay, so yeah, so you'd had your fourth birthday
in May.
Today?
Oh, yes,
today is the 5th of May when this is going out.
Yes,
so
correct.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
How old are you? Well, people will work it out because
953.
Yeah. Well, two of those numbers are in your age.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll cut that. Just crit. Shit. Right, okay. Is it 957, 953?
953.
You got it right, yeah, good.
But yeah, he's meant to be the Sylvester McCoy fan.
Yeah, cut this bit.
No, I'm keeping it in. Just
cut it, you bastard!
Yeah, that's got to stay in now. So before we get into Delta and the Bannerman,
yes.
Let's do our usual news segment. Anything happened in the world of Doctor Who?
Oh, not really.
No, not really.
Not these days.
Well, you say that, but actually there's a few little tidbits of things that have come out.
Go on then.
So, Doctor Who Redacted, as we mentioned last time.
We did.
I have now listened to the first two episodes. Episode three has come out, but I've not listened to that yet.
And your thoughts, Matthew Toffolo?
Without going in it too much, because I know this will be something Billy and I discuss at length. Really, really good. Really good. It was something that I sort of dismissed as like, oh, okay, just another bit of flim-flam alongside the main show. I actually wasn't going to bother listening to it. I thought, I'll give it a go. And honestly,
you've enjoyed it.
I've really enjoyed it.
That's good.
It's very Russell T Davies Doctor Who. So if you like your very realistic characters and a bit more, I don't want to say soapiness to it, but you know, more social realism to your drama, to your Doctor Who, definitely give it a go.
And how long are these episodes?
They're about 20 minutes each.
So, okay, so that's quite a nice time.
It's a nice time. Yeah. It's not like you're having to listen to a big finished story and it's like 45, 50 minutes.
Yeah.
You can just take a little snippet out of your day while you're doing the washing up or whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a good listen. There's lots of Easter eggs to other stories. I shan't spoil
them. Well, we are in Easter at the moment, Easter period, so that's quite useful.
That is quite useful.
Yeah.
So the theology teacher in
theology
coming
here,
out.
Yeah,
so Doctor Who Redacted, definitely give it a listen. And like I said, Billy and I will be talking about that at some point in the future.
Okay.
And then what else have we had? It was Big Finish Day, I think, last weekend or the weekend before, so between us recording. And the big announcement from that was that Big Finish have the license to 13th Doctor era characters, including the Master and the Fugitive Doctor, meaning that we will now be getting a Master box set, or a series of Master box sets with Sacha Dhawan, and we will also be getting a series of Fugitive Doctor box sets with Jo Martin reprising her role as the Fugitive Doctor.
That would be interesting, particularly depending on how the next episode finishes with
yes.
her. If it's not very well, you know, realised, perhaps... Yeah.
Well,
the finish
if she's in it at all, because we don't really know if Jo Martin is in it. I would assume that she is.
Yeah. To try and tie up that...
Yeah, that whole arc.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, as we've said on previous episodes of the podcast, that centenary special, if she is in it as well, my God, that is getting very, very busy. Interesting that they've now got the license to do that. It does make me wonder how long it will be before Jodie Whittaker perhaps steps in and does some stuff.
Oh, on audio.
On
yeah.
audio. Now that she's just going to be having a baby,
yes.
that might just be the sort of thing that she
wants
to
do.
Yeah. Because it'll be like, well, I can work from home.
Yeah.
I can
yeah.
take an record. Hour or two recording a Doctor Who.
Absolutely.
You never know. So that's interesting.
Anything else, or was that about it?
Anything else? Anything else has happened? Well, off the back of the Fugitive Doctor, in that same vein, we've got a Fugitive Doctor comic book coming out very soon. And that is supposed to tie in with all of her origins and all that kind of stuff. I think from what people have said or the description for the Big Finish stuff, it takes her audio adventures take place after the Fugitive of the Jadoon. So it's after the 13th Doctor finds her and gives her memories back and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know if it'll be delving too much into her time with Division and all that stuff. But it'll be interesting to see, or listen to, nonetheless. But then Chris Chibnall did a massive interview in DWM.
He did, didn't he? Yes.
This month, which was really interesting. It was interesting to see how he talked about his time on the series, because I sort of got the impression that he sort of took the job because no one else was going to take the job. And I think he sort of felt like, well...
Begrudgingly.
I don't know if it was necessarily begrudgingly. I think it was just like, well, if I don't do it, I'll probably regret it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It just didn't seem... I don't know. It didn't seem like he had necessarily a plan of what he wanted to do if he ever got Doctor Who.
I see.
Other than, I'd like to cast a woman.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to hear about where the Timeless Child stuff came from. That came from the fact that Chris Chibnall was adopted, so he wanted an adoption storyline and... a little bit about, you know, what makes you. Is it your parents or is it, you know, your upbringing?
Nature,
nurture. Yeah. So it was really interesting, and it was fun to see, you know, the stories of his that he wasn't so keen on, like the Battle of Rav's Kor of Kolos or whatever the hell that story is called, which he said was not his favourite because it was a first draft that had to be filmed.
Gosh, I mean, it's incredulous thinking that the first draft made it on screen.
Yeah, But apparently, that isn't the first time it's happened. It's happened with, like, Russell, I think, and Stephen. I think their schedules are just so massively busy and so hectic that they just, sometimes these things happen.
Yeah.
Because I guess they're not only writing their own scripts and doing all of the masses of other stuff that comes with that job.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But then they're tidying up other people's scripts and helping other writers.
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah, I think, you know, you don't know the half of it, really. I think it's very easy for us to sit on our soapbox or sit on our leather sofa and just talk nonsense about it.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. So yeah, definitely pick up DWM for this month if you're interested in seeing what Chris Chibnall has to say about his time on Doctor Who. It might be the only time he talks about it now.
Possibly.
Before the Russell T Davies era 0.2 starts off. Millennium Effects, who left Doctor Who with Series 12.
Well, they're back, aren't they?
They who have announced that they're coming back for new Doctor Who. Neil Gorton, I think, mentioned it on a Facebook group. And he said the second Doctor Who reboot is how he referred to it.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I guess that kind of channels in with what we were thinking, that this new era of Doctor Who would be a bit more like Series 1.
Yeah.
Very much back to basics. Mm. Not stripping all the continuity, but not continuity heavy.
Yes, yeah.
Because, you know, even the Chris Chibnall stuff has been quite continuity laden.
Yeah.
In terms of like Cybermen, Daleks, Sontarans, Gallifrey, Timeless Child stuff.
Yes.
So, yeah, lots of stuff.
And wasn't there a magazine that came out recently all about the figures, the toys?
There's a magazine that has come out about the
figures. But don't bother getting it because they never asked Matt to do anything and it's crap.
Yeah, they never... I was not asked to contribute, which was quite sad.
Mm.
But, never mind. so that's the Doctor Who news roundup. Oh, and I think season 22 might be coming out next month.
Ah.
We're in May now,
we're in
aren't
May
we?
Now,
so
yes.
June.
So it is
possibly.
Next month.
So it is next month.
Yeah.
Hopefully, anyway.
Delayed, isn't it? Has it been delayed?
It was delayed. I think it was supposed to come out in March. And
is that COVID-related stuff?
I think
possibly,
so,
yeah.
And all that kind of thing. So, hopefully, June or July, we should finally be getting our lovely Season 22 box sets in the post.
Good.
But now, let's travel back to Wales.
1987.
So, Jonathan.
Yes.
Seeing as you were a little baba.
I was.
When this was on.
Yes.
Tell me what you remember about...
this story?
Well, 1987.
Well, I didn't know. I was four. I didn't remember much from 1987, but I do remember this story. I remember watching it.
Where would you have watched this? At home or...
At home.
Yeah,
at home. And certain bits stand out to me more than others.
Okay.
Yeah, other bits, you know, I remember the Bannerman being quite cool. I quite enjoyed them.
Sticking their tongues out,
yeah. And the cliffhanger to episode 2, I remember that one quite vividly, you know, when he comes down the steps.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember that one. I know it's not a particularly good cliffhanger, but for some reason it sticks in my mind, that thought. Maybe as a four-year-old, I thought, oh, crikey, they're going to shoot him.
Yeah.
You know.
You can only hope.
It's a very dangerous point on the end of this story. Right, okay.
Okay, interesting, because, you know, you would think that you would probably remember episode 1 more with the green baby and the...
Yeah, I mean, obviously I do remember that as well. Obviously that was quite interesting. Good effect, actually.
It is a good effect. So... usually what happens in this segment, Billy will always turn around to me and say, right, what was the number one hit single of 1987 at that time?
No idea.
And then what was the number one film at the box office? No ideas?
No, haven't got a clue.
Haven't got Scooby? Nope. Well, I had a quick look and I can also tell you I haven't got a frigging clue. So in the box office for around that time, UK box office, was a film called White Mischief.
Never heard of it?
No, it's got Charles Dance in it. From Game of Thrones, pretty good. And then UK number one was You Win Again by the Bee Gees.
Really?
Mm.
Okay.
Which I was quite surprised for 1987, but...
okay.
Were they still making music then?
I have no idea.
No, but there we are. That was that little segment, completely butchered. what was in the charts in terms of video games? I don't know, probably Super Mario.
Mario, on the NES, yes, yeah.
Would you have had a NES by then?
87, possibly.
4 years old, really?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I was a bit
older.
Was
it yours or was it Paolo's?
No, it was mine.
Okay.
Yeah, Dad bought it for me. Because you weren't around.
No,
so it was for me.
I was not around.
Yeah, I reckon then, or maybe the following year, maybe when I was five, perhaps, we got the NES. But it was around that time.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
It's so weird to think that, you know, at one minute you're playing your NES, the other later on you're watching Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Like... live as it's happening. And the NES is new,
yes.
You know, is a new console.
Brilliant.
Graphics are all cutting edge.
They were compared to like Pong.
Yeah, well, you know.
Which is a good game, by the way.
Oh, Pong's a classic.
Yeah.
But we're not here to talk about Pong.
No, we're not,
or
no.
The NES.
No.
So, because that is obviously your era of Doctor Who, what do you think of the title sequence for Sylvester McCoy's era?
I really like it, but I mean, obviously, I'm probably going to say that, but I, you know, it just stood out to me at the time.
Yeah.
And even now, I still think it's quite a good retro type of, you know, title sequence. I like the music, the sound of it,
yeah,
the look of it.
Yeah.
I really like it. I know some people hate it.
I was going to say, I mean, I completely agree with you. I love the, because it's the same, like, seeing it as a kid, you know, I always loved it because it was so energetic.
Yeah.
And it was like a real roller coaster ride through the stars. Whereas, you know, the more traditional title sequences are just the time tunnel. This just
and they're great as well. Obviously, don't get
me
wrong.
Yeah, they're
the original classic. Yeah.
But there was just something exciting.
Yeah, and, just different, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I guess the up-tempo music as well.
Yeah, different key.
Different key, yeah, much to Delia Derbyshire's
dismay. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I really love it, and I love Kef's rendition of the theme. I know some people say it's the worst version of the theme, and I think that is completely
wrong.
Yeah,
I don't agree with that.
I don't agree with that at all.
No.
Keeping on the theme of Kef McCulloch, his score for this story.
Yeah, really good.
Really good, isn't it?
It just fits in so well with the era.
I mean, obviously, it's got that 80s synth quality to it because, you know, it's all composed on his Yamaha and his synthesizers. But
the feel of the 50s is there, isn't it?
Very much so. Yeah. There's a real
rock and roll
vibe. Even with stuff like bespoke music composed, Here's to the Future, music at the end.
Yeah.
It just really, I think this the soundtrack for me encapsulates the feel-good nature of this story.
Mm.
Now, I have gone on record many times saying that season 24 is my least favourite season of Doctor Who.
Yeah. Do you mean even including modern-day Doctor Who, or do you mean other classics?
Of the classics, it is my least favourite season of Doctor Who.
But not of including modern Doctor Who, surely not.
I would have said, once upon a time, that season 24 was my least favourite season altogether.
Interesting.
Not now, though.
Okay.
Because I think seasons like series 11, like Jodie Whittaker's first series.
Yes.
I don't think that's very good.
No.
So I get more enjoyment, even from a story that I dislike, like Paradise Towers.
Yes.
When we watched the season 24
recently,
box set together, I actually sat down and thought, you know what? Although this is ridiculous.
There's mad stuff in it. And I say that as well, don't get me wrong. I agree, there are mad bits in it. You know?
And it's a bit crap. I'm enjoying it. Mm. I can switch my brain off and just go, well, it's good fun.
And they're having a good time and they're enjoying
they're having
it.
A good time. Like even Time in the Rani. I know people really go hard on Time in the Rani, but I don't think Time in the Rani is that bad.
No, I don't think so. I mean, that was the first story I ever watched.
Yeah.
And it grabbed my attention.
Yeah.
And kept me going. Here I am now, you know, 40 years later. Not quite, but nearly.
Just like a sad git.
Just like an idiot. Yeah.
So there you are. That's a parental warning. Don't watch Time in the Rani.
No. Otherwise you might end up like me. Sad, lonely bastard. Don't put that in.
I'm not editing out. So let's start at the beginning of the story. We kick off this episode.
Are you not going to ask me first, do I like the story? Like, overall, whether we like it generally before we go into bits and pieces?
Well, we can do. Do you like the story?
I do. I think it's a very good story.
Yeah, I also really like it.
Yeah, I know, again, lots of people don't like it.
Lots of people don't like it. But,
I think it's a good little romp.
It's a good little romp, and it's always been my favourite out of this season.
I know it has for you, yeah.
Which I know some people will probably be shocked because they'll probably think, well, what? You've got Dragonfire in that season.
Yeah, yeah.
But honestly, I've never been that keen
on
Dragonfire, but this one is just, it's just good fun.
Mm.
It's just good fun.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
done well, isn't it?
It's done very well. Yeah. It's a nice production. Mm. It looks
pretty good.
Swish.
Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah.
There's a few bits here and there.
Well, yeah.
But that's par for the course with any Doctor Who story.
Some good explosions.
Some fantastic explosions. Mm. And so speaking of explosions, the story kicks off with a really good action sequence,
it does.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So that really gets you into the action of the story.
The music's good as well, from Kef in that opening scene.
Yeah, good bit of quarry action.
Yeah, the quarry action. Good. The guy dies falling off the quarry.
Yeah,
off the top of the cliff.
Yeah. And you've got, like, you know, stuff like the spaceship looks really good.
It does look good,
You know, there's some good model work here. And even later on when you've got the satellite coming out of the NASA rocket or whatever.
Yes,
that all looks really good.
Yeah, for the time, doesn't it?
For
87.
Well, yeah. It still stands up today.
Yeah.
And especially stuff like the sequence where the TARDIS rescues the bus.
Mm.
That looks
I love
really
that
good.
One. With the light, the beam,
the
little, yeah, that,
the
that
beam,
is good.
Yeah, it's very, very good.
Yeah.
So, and stuff like the makeup on the Shimmerons. Mm. I don't think J&T was particularly pleased with it, but we saw it the other day and we thought, actually, this looks all right.
It wasn't too bad, was it? Yeah.
They kind of look like the little green toy soldiers.
They do.
That you can, used to be able to get. I don't know if they still do those.
Like from Toy Story.
I don't know if that was intentional or just some weird thing, but... Yeah. We're also introduced to our main villain at the start of the episode, Gavrok, as played by Don Henderson, who plays him fantastically
He's great, isn't he? Yeah.
He is so good because he doesn't ham it up at all.
He doesn't, He plays it straight, doesn't he?
He plays it dead straight, which is what is needed, you know. And I think this is why, in contrast, a story like Paradise Towers
where it's hammed up.
Work.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think Paradise Towers is obviously so camp and ridiculous. Mm. Then when you have your baddie also being camp and ridiculous, the threat is just diminished.
Yes, that makes sense,
But here, it balances it out.
It does,
and you feel like the threat is genuine.
Mm. And of course, Kane plays it straight as
well. And Kane plays it straight as well. So I think that's... Yeah. And to be fair, even the Rani plays it straight.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's all daft dressing up like Mel and stuff. But, you know, it is still... There is an element of villainy and menace. Yeah, you don't have...
Malevolence, you get that sense, don't you?
Yeah, you know, it doesn't feel comical in the same way as Richard Pryor is going, oh, and all that stuff. So he's great. Don Henderson, of course, being in Star Wars, A New Hope.
Yes, Red Dwarf.
And Red Dwarf as the simulant in that Crichton episode.
Yeah. I never get invited to parties. You got the part, by the way.
Thank you very much. And that bit when he's eating the meat as well.
Oh, it's fantastic.
I think that was his...
I think the hands, were they not his idea? To have the hands
webbed? Yeah, that's
really
cool.
That was his idea as
well, the hands look awful.
They do.
It's really good because, you know, it's not... It's just subtle enough to make him feel alien.
It is,
Much in the same way that the Bannermen, you know, they look humanoid, but then they stick their tongues out and they look like they've been eating...
And
like,
they're red, aren't they?
Yeah, it looks like they've been licking... like
lollipops.
Lollipops, yeah. Yeah, Bannerman. Do you think they're a good threatening baddie?
Well, they're okay. They're not fantastic, are they?
No, they're a bit hopeless.
They're a bit
compared
hopeless.
To him.
No, because they're very different, really, aren't they?
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't kill them all and do it on his own. He'd be
probably do it much better.
He'd do it much
better, really.
I'll be honest with you.
Yeah. So he's really good. I think he really roots the story.
He does.
In a way.
Yeah.
Then we've got the introduction of. One of the guest casting choices of J&T that got a lot of criticism back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is Ken Dodd as the toll
master
at the spaceport.
Ken Dodd. Saw Ken Dodd at the Hippodrome.
We saw Ken Dodd live, yeah. He was very good.
Brilliant, wasn't he? Absolutely brilliant.
Excellent.
Yeah.
He was so
good. Gosh, he did that show for hours.
Yeah.
On his own. I'm not sure whether he had a supporting...
Nope.
He didn't, did he? And it was... Well, he said you never go out of the theatre. That's when he was running jokes, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it was like 10:30. It was ridiculous.
You always got your money's worth.
Yeah.
Always got your money's worth.
He was brilliant.
He was so good. And what did you... I mean, obviously, for you as a kid, it wouldn't have really
mattered
who it was because you were so small, you wouldn't have known he was
Ken. Yeah, I mean, and he was only in it briefly, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, fine. I mean, I didn't really think much of it, to be honest, you know.
No.
I mean, I think he does it quite well.
I think he does it very well.
And, you know, he's got a little twinkle in his eye, hasn't he? You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, the death scene, obviously, is a bit over the top.
Well, I think...
And obviously, that's why they cut.
Yeah, I think you see the extended version on the Blu-ray, the death scene is rather ridiculous.
Yeah.
But where they cut it, I think it works fine.
It works fine where they cut it, yeah.
Yeah. I really don't understand the criticism. I think it was probably just this thing of...
Well, you're getting in these people to try and get the show some publicity, as it were.
Yeah.
I
think he was very good casting for that part.
Yeah.
He really does it very well.
Mm.
And so the Doctor and Mel win their trip to Disneyland.
You do.
Going back to 1959.
Mm.
Unfortunately... It all goes a bit tits up.
It does.
We've got another alien race. Well, we've got the Shimmerons, the green soldier men, led by Delta, the titular Delta, who has run off with an incubator.
Yeah.
And then we've got... And this is interesting, and I hadn't thought about this. So the incubator has the egg in it.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend said this yesterday when we were talking about it. She said, "Who's the daddy?"
Yeah, I mean, that's not... alluded to, is it?
No. And the guy...
Not the guy that gets killed.
Well, I said maybe it's the guy who gets killed. But it's weird. He turns around to her and says, here, take this, being the incubator. Mm. That's a bit like... I mean, I guess they're trying to save the surprise that there's a baby.
There's a baby inside it, yeah.
But it just feels a bit weird. Mm. Take this.
Yeah, true.
Because I said, well, maybe they're Shimmerons, maybe they don't have fathers, maybe they're...
Yes, you did say that, it's possible.
But then later on at the end of the story, Billy does say that they need a male...
To continue the race.
To continue the race. So
therefore, one would assume they do procreate in some strange way.
Yeah. Yeah, just a weird tangent there.
But, before we go on, we should say that when the Doctor comes out of the TARDIS...
Oh, Christ, here we go.
...in this scene, yeah. We see this for the first time.
He's holding up his brolly, people, yes, on Spotify. On He's not always wanging.
So, yeah, we see his question mark umbrella for the first time, because obviously the first two stories he doesn't have the question mark umbrella. He has the wooden umbrella in Paradise Towers, of course.
Bamboo, yeah.
The bamboo one. But he has this one from this story, and hence when the door opens, you don't see the Doctor first, you see the brolly come out first. I think it was probably intended to show, this is a new prop. But it wasn't the finished prop, of course, because the end of the brolly was not painted red in this story. It was still plain. It wasn't until the following story, Dragonfire, when it was finally painted red. So it was not quite finished in that story.
Wow. So I hope our listeners and viewers feel...
You can rest easily now.
Yeah, feel enriched by that information.
Yeah, yeah, I've got more tidbits to come, don't worry.
Oh, God, okay. Okay. So speaking of brollies, he uses it as a extra prop, doesn't he, in Inside the TARDIS?
He does. And of course, that scene's very interesting because that wasn't actually filmed for this. Well, it was filmed
block.
For this block. But it was filmed during Dragonfire.
Yeah.
And we know that because the brolly end is red and also because the chain is the other way around in that story.
Oh, is that why you're wearing
that's
it like this
today? That's why I'm wearing it for this story.
Oh,
so
okay.
So in Dragonfire, it's that way around. And you see that in that scene, so that's why.
Oh, very nice, yeah. Very nice.
And while I'm on costumes, might as well just carry on, really. this is also the first story that we know that he's actually wearing a tank top, a pullover, because in the first two stories, he doesn't take his jacket off. But in this story, at the dance, of course, he does. And we know that it's actually a tank top and not a jumper. Hmm. Does anybody care? Nobody except me in the whole world, but there we go.
Well, there we go. So if you were knitting your jumper in 1987 and you were foolish enough to have added sleeves,
yes,
and then you tuned in for Delta and the Bannerman episode one,
yeah,
and saw him without his jacket on, you'd have gone, oh, God, I've added sleeves to this bloody thing.
I've got to take the sleeves off.
Take the sleeves off. Well, thank you.
Just thought I'd add that little bit of information.
I'm sure the people listening find it fascinating. Mm. If you do, please leave a comment below. And let us know. Otherwise, just tell us to shut him up.
Don't worry, this is my last one now, so Billy's back next time, so you'll be fine.
Normality resumes,
yeah.
Until we drag you back for something else.
Yeah, my lord.
So we've got the other aliens in this story, the purple blobby...
Yes.
God, what are they called? This is bad, we only watched it yesterday.
Yes. Navarones. Navarones? No.
Ghost of Navarones.
Something like that.
Navinos.
No, look it up.
Oh, God, this is really bad. This is really bad.
We won't put all this in, will we?
Oh, we might do, because it's quite funny.
Is it?
What are they called?
It shows we're fallible.
It shows we're something. Delta and the Bannerman. We were paying attention when we watched this story. Delta and the Bannerman, they are called...
I'm sure it's something like Navarones or something.
It is something like that. Oh,
that's what I said. What'd you laugh at me for then?
Well, because that's the cowboy film.
The Guns of Navarone. Yes, I know that.
It's the Guns of Navarone!
Yeah, thank you, Rick Mell.
Feck me. Plot. Here we go. Da-da-da-da-da. Navarinos.
Oh, so close. So,
yeah, Navarinos. Okay, Navarinos. So we've got the blobby Navarinos who have disguised themselves as human beings... on this Nostalgia Tours trip, which I think is a great concept.
It's good, isn't it?
I think that's really clever.
It's fun, isn't it? And different.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's nice to think that every human being or most of the human characters in this story or extras are all purple blobby aliens.
Yeah, correct, yeah.
And I think it's great, you know, they've got the bus that's souped up to travel through space.
Yeah.
It's really fun. It's so Doctor Who.
Mm.
I think it's so Doctor Who to have the familiar, but it's alien and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Very, very good. And then, of course, they are they run into some trouble by smashing into a satellite on their travels.
Yeah.
And
Doctor saves the day.
Doctor saves the day. And so they don't land in Disneyland. They land in true Doctor Who fashion in Wales, Shangri-La holiday camp.
Yeah.
Barry Island, isn't it? Is it Barry Island where it was shot?
Possibly.
Somewhere like that.
Yeah.
Little did they know that would be the home for Doctor Who for the 21st century.
Interesting, yeah.
Isn't that really funny?
Yeah. And
again, what a perfect setting for
great.
A Doctor Who story.
Yeah.
You know, very British. Mm. Obviously very of that
period. Of the time, yeah.
Yeah.
Of the time, yeah. Very popular, weren't they?
Very popular.
Yeah.
Although when we were watching it, we both said, my God, couldn't think of anything worse than being somewhere like that.
Oh, we said that, yeah.
Yeah. But funny to think, like, you know, our parents or our grandparents probably
might
have holidayed at a place not dissimilar to that. Poor them. Then we get introduced to some of the other characters who make this story even more colourful.
Yeah.
So we've got Burton, the holiday camp.
Yeah.
The guy who runs the holiday
camp.
Played
so well.
Played fantastically well. I didn't take down the actor's name, but he is so good.
Mm.
He's brilliant.
Mm.
Also joined by John Nathan Turner's dog, Pepsi.
Yeah.
Making one of several appearances in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very good getting him in there. Then we're introduced to Billy. The mechanic who
helps out to try and
fix the bus.
Yeah.
Quite how he manages to
this alien technology.
Bit weird, but you know he muscles through.
Yeah,
and then we have our companion who isn't a companion but might have been a companion.
Yeah.
We've got Ray.
Yes.
So let's talk about Ray a little bit.
Hmm.
What do we think of Ray as a potential companion? She's a biker girl. Mm. She's always equipped with her bag of tools.
Mm.
That's her little gimmick.
Mm.
What do we think?
She's like Ace, basically, isn't she?
She is a bit of an ace.
Yeah.
Rather than Nitro 9, she's got a toolkit. That seems to be a running theme with Andrew Cartmell's would-be companion. Because you've got this with Ray.
Mm.
You've got Ace with her Nitro 9.
Yeah.
And then I think with the other companion that would have taken over in season 27.
Yeah.
Rain, I think her name was. She would have been a safecracker. So one would assume she would have had a kit that would have allowed her to
access
break
safes.
Into things all that sort of stuff. A burglar's kit.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is interesting.
All of those companions would have had a little gimmick.
Yeah.
But I guess that's just a little something to...
And strong women as well.
And strong women
isn't
too.
He's trying, he's trying to get away from the tripping over,
very much so.
Screaming.
Sylvester McCoy's Doctor, I don't think people say this enough, but Sylvester McCoy's Doctor is a bit of an action man, isn't he, really?
He is.
Because he rides the motorbike in this story.
Yeah.
He rides
Survival.
The motorbike in Survival. He gets in that go-kart thing in
Happiness Patrol.
He drives the van in
Remembrance of the Daleks.
He's a bit of an action man. People think that, you know, he's just a funny little man in a straw hat.
Yeah.
But, you know, he has his moments.
He does have moments. Yeah, he does, yeah.
Which is really cool. I like that because, it just presents all these different facets to a character whose appearance you would not assume them to do that.
Yeah.
That's just a little side bit. I think it would have been interesting having Ray aboard the TARDIS.
It would have been,
would have been learning how to do stuff to the TARDIS.
Possibly.
How to fix the console and all this sort of stuff. She'd have been really interested. I think she'd have been really good fun.
Mm.
And I think the actress who plays her does
a good job.
Does a really good job.
Does a good job.
Particularly in
And you
the
feel
way,
so sorry for her, don't you?
You do feel sorry for
because
her.
Because of the love for Billy, you know.
Yes, that unrequited love.
Yeah, you know.
Billy's a bit stupid, isn't he, really? Because here he's got this pretty girl who really likes him.
She adores him.
She has all the same interests.
Yeah.
And
he's just sort of
He's smitten by this alien lady.
Yeah.
So shout out to Ray. Mm. Why doesn't she come back in a big Finnish box set?
She would be a good character to bring back.
They should do a Ray, not necessarily a box set, but they should go back to Shangri-La. However
See
many
what
years
she's up
later,
to.
What would it be? 40 No, it's not 40. Is it 40 years?
What, now, present day?
Yeah, like, would it be 40 years for that actress since you last played the part?
Getting on 30-odd, wouldn't it?
30-odd years. Mm. So, what was it, 69, 69, 79, 89? Oh, my God, it'd be, like, the period when she actually recorded it.
Yeah.
It'd be, like, late 80s. Late 80s Ray, what's she up to?
Mm.
Do it, that'd be good. She probably runs her own, like, mechanics workshop
probably would do.
Or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I shouldn't say that. Give someone ideas and they'll writes it for Big Finish. Yeah, but shout out to her. And the way that she says ionized.
She loves that word, doesn't
she?
Yeah, it's good.
He's been ionized.
Yeah.
He was ionized.
Yeah, she likes that one.
Yeah, very good. Delta. Yeah, let's talk about Delta. The titular Delta. She's a bit shit. That's what I put in my notes.
Yeah, she's not the greatest actress, is she? She's not overly believable.
No.
She's a bit wooden. Yeah. Isn't she, as a character.
Yeah.
She's a nice looking lady, very striking, you know, and she,
yeah,
you know,
you can
the
see
princess,
why.
Yeah, you can see why she was
Billy,
chosen, yeah.
You know, she caught Billy's eye. Maybe he's got a thing for women with slightly green pallor to their skin.
Possibly.
Yeah. But yeah, she's aloof, isn't she?
Yeah, she's aloof.
She's aloof.
She is.
And, you know, that's clearly his sort
thing.
Of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's drawn to that, yeah.
He's drawn to that type of girl. They have a nice dance. That's good fun.
Yes,
Kef McCulloch is in the band.
Kef's in the band, which is lovely.
Good fun.
Yeah.
Billy does a bit of singing. Silv does a bit of dancing.
With his pullover.
With his pullover. Not dancing with his pullover.
No, not with his.
Just his pullover on.
Not just his pullover on. He's got other clothes on as well.
Well,
trousers,
yeah, I don't think so. It's just a family show, Silv. Put your keks back on.
Oh, dear.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yes. Now, why does Delta run away from the dance? I forgot. She buggers off. Mel follows her. Mel shares that because they all get split up. Mel shares a room with Delta.
She does,
and she says to the doctor, doesn't she? Like,
Ray runs off because she's sad because
he's singing. Why do fools fall in
correct.
Love? To Delta.
To Delta. So then the doctor follows Ray.
Yeah. Delta buggers off, doesn't
Delta
she?
Delta goes off as well, does she? I can't remember. Yeah.
Delta goes off, Mel pursues Delta. Or does Mel just go back to the
chalet, perhaps. Yeah.
Anyhow, then we have the cliffhanger to episode one, which is, first of all, a green baby being hatched from an egg.
Yeah, which looks really good.
It does look really good.
I'm very impressed with that.
Yeah, what's that again? Effect. That puppet's really good.
That puppet is excellent.
Yeah.
It's quite scary, actually.
It is quite scary.
As a little kid, you see that happening.
And you used to be able to get those babies.
Did you? Could you?
On eBay, I remember.
Really?
Yeah, you could get yourself a Shimmeron baby.
Right, okay. Oh, sorry, you mean like a mock-up prop?
Yeah, prop.
Oh, I see, right, okay, I thought you meant... Yeah, okay, fine, yeah.
Yeah. Not a real one.
No, I didn't mean that.
They were quite easy to come by. I've seen a few people with Shimmeron babies in their collection. Never fancied a Shimmeron baby for your Doctor collection?
No, I'm all right for the time being.
Yeah.
I've got other things I need to get first. Yeah, yeah.
So that does look really good. Apparently the effect took hours to set up.
I bet it did.
And I think it was in DWM. They said that the props man was so pissed off with it that after they'd finished recording the scene, they kicked it.
Oh no!
They booted it down the bloody field of, you know, the park because they were so sick of it.
Wow! So the original prop doesn't exist anymore.
No,
much what a
to
shame.
The disappointment of the of it was. Oh gosh, I forget the names of the people who sculpted it. But they're very nice.
Oh gosh!
Yeah, and I think they were a bit annoyed that happened.
Sure, they were. Yeah.
And then, of course, there's a bit of a double jeopardy story. Cliffhanger, sorry.
Yes.
Because then you've got...
The bounty hunter who finds Silv.
Yeah.
Because Silv sneezes. And I won't sneeze now for you. And...
Good television sneeze.
Yes.
Yeah.
And gives himself away with Ray, of course.
Yeah.
And
what were they up to?
Well, she was hiding,
fumbling around in the blankets.
Fumbling around in the blankets.
He did it right for himself there, Silv.
He did well. And... And of course, this bounty hunter comes along and he's going to kill them both.
Because he doesn't just kill for money.
No, he kills for pleasure.
Yeah.
He does, yeah.
Brummy alien as well.
Brummy alien, yeah, that's good. But his blue suede shoes. That's
excellent. A good gag.
That's a very good gag.
When Gavrok kills him and it's just his blue suede shoes left
behind. I like that. That's good.
That's good fun.
Yeah.
It must have been a hell of an explosion to knock out the pair of them, though.
I would just, yeah. Well, they were in quite close proximity, weren't they, to him, to be honest? They weren't, like, miles away. They were quite in that little store cupboard they were in, the area.
And that is, of course, the first time we get Ray's wonderful delivery of ionised!
Yeah, well, the doctor says it first, of course, doesn't he? He uses the term, and then she then repeats it infinitum, you know, so...
And, of course, Billy then walks in and sees... Not Billy Garrett John.
No. He's Billy, in New Zealand still.
He's in New Zealand. Billy walks in on little Babby.
Yes.
Remember, this is still the puppet at this point. It's still the little...
It's still the puppet still hatching
little,
out. Yeah,
yeah, still a little creature.
And or in her arms, maybe, at
it's
this
in her
stage.
Arms,
yeah.
Isn't it? He's there with his flowers. He's slipped his hair back.
He's like, all ready to go.
He looks like John Travolta.
He does
Greece.
Look like John Travolta. And he goes, sees it, and is a bit shocked, but then is quite quickly... She, accepting of
you know, she
said child.
She just turns around and says to him, you know,
we need to talk.
Yeah, something like that, isn't it? And is he probably the most accepting man in the universe?
I think probably, yes.
Because I think most men would have seen that and either
ran away,
shit their pants and ran away, Yeah, but clearly he's clearly got the hots for her.
He's into
much,
her, isn't he? Yeah, he really is into
he's
her.
He's into that weird shit.
Yeah.
Green alien babies as well. this is interesting.
Go on.
I've put it in my thing about room 101. The doctor is in.
Well, I picked that up, didn't I? Yeah. He's in room 101. I mean, maybe it's, you know, just coincidence, but I thought interesting that they put me in room 101, that shallow, you know. Yeah. You either love him or hate it, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe the thoughts of Doctor Who at the time from people.
Yeah, because we were going to look up, was room 101
Yeah, a thing. I don't know whether the programme was on it then. I wouldn't have thought so. But it
was
wrong,
the idea of room 101 as a concept.
I assume that was still around, but I don't know.
Who knows? Interesting. We haven't really talked about the sort of secondary plot to this whole story.
Oh, yes.
With the two...
The satellite and the
US
two...
US agents. Yeah.
So two very good actors.
Yeah. One of whom was a big Hollywood actor.
I
forget his name.
Weismiller.
Yeah.
He was the character.
The character, yeah.
He was a big Hollywood actor, wasn't he?
Yeah.
In days gone by.
He
and
was,
so...
and he was also in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
He was in that good film, right.
He gets smooched by Jessica Rabbit.
Jessica Rabbit, he does, that's right. So to get him, interesting. And of course you see the TARDIS as well, or the police box, which is quite nice.
Yeah, that's nice that they use a police box. As an actual police box, that's good fun.
That's good.
So...
And they've got a good double act, haven't they?
They've got a
they
good
work
rapport.
Well, good rapport, works well.
And then their plot collides with the main plot as of part two.
Yeah.
But before that happens, we get... to introduce to Garonway, who you mentioned at the start.
Yes.
Beekeeper.
Yeah.
He's a really nice character.
He's a lovely character, played so well again by that fantastic actor.
Yeah, he does it incredibly well.
Yeah.
It's
played very subtly, isn't it?
That
character.
Is it naturally eccentric without being ridiculous?
Yeah.
He's got something of the Doctor about him. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's got that little mischievous twinkle in his
eye,
hasn't he?
He's got that
twinkle
in his eye.
Yeah.
Just all that stuff about... When he talked about the butterfly and the pupa.
Yeah,
he said,
that's lovely.
Just look at the butterfly, it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
If you saw a pupa, you think it was the ugliest thing you'd ever seen.
Yes.
But you can't have one without the other.
Yeah.
It's just these little lines that just make this story sparkle.
They do, yeah.
There's some lovely character stuff in this.
Yeah. And they're written well.
Something we didn't mention about Chimeron Babies. Well, you said how wonderful that puppet is.
Ah, yes.
So throughout the next two episodes, this Chimeron baby starts to grow up.
Very quickly. Yeah.
And unfortunately, stage two of baby growth is absolutely ridiculous.
Yes.
Baby in a baby grow.
Yeah, with a green...
Patchy green face.
Yeah.
It looks so ridiculous.
It's not good, is it?
It's not good. It is quite laughable.
Yeah, it is laughable, really.
But I guess they needed to try and show...
the transition, didn't they?
But wouldn't it have just made more sense to have just had a baby grow and not had that head covering?
Possibly.
Just painted him... Oh, no, but then maybe they would have had to have painted the whole baby's head.
That's probably why they didn't do that. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, you know, they can't do like a latex prosthetic on a baby.
No, I don't think so. Not even in the '80s would they have been allowed to do that.
I guess now they just CGI.
Yeah, something over it, wouldn't
they? They put a few dots on his head and mocap it or whatever.
Yeah.
So that is a shame.
Yeah.
But yeah, then you've got the doctor is of course on high alert because now they know that the Bannermen are on the way.
They're on the way.
So it's all it's quick. We've got to try and find Delta. Mm. So they're going around all the beauty spots.
This is the beauty spot on the bike.
A bit more sadness for poor old Ray.
Yeah.
What's Mel doing at this point? She just
so Mel. What is she doing? Is she not with the?
She's just with the cast of Heidi High.
The Heidi High cast, that's right. Yeah, she's with them.
Because it is Heidi High meets Doctor Who.
It is, really. Yeah, I think she's with them, isn't she? Doing bits and pieces.
She's trying to get them all evacuated, I guess.
She is, because they know that the Bannermen are on the way, so she's helping out the guy, isn't he? The driver, the bus driver.
Yeah. Yes, because Burton gets all the human people on a bus and they bugger off to wherever.
Yeah.
And then the other bus, the proper transport bus for the nostalgia tours, that's been fixed up by the doctor using the crystal that he's grown.
Yeah.
So it all seems fine. Mm. Until, of course...
Yes, tragedy strikes.
Tragedy strikes. Gavrok turns up. Well, Gavrok turns up and blows up the tent of those American guys.
Yeah, fantastic.
In the most incredible explosion that you've ever seen for a tent.
Yeah, it's really good.
Meanwhile, when he blows up the bus, which you think would be an equally tremendous explosion...
Yeah.
It's a bit of a little piffle of a fart
it is
of an explosion,
really.
In comparison.
It is, yeah, it's interesting.
But so, it never really dawned on me until very recently.
He wipes them all out.
He kills all those people. I mean, Mel obviously makes a big point about it.
Of course, yeah.
But that is so dark in a story that up until this point has been quite
jovial, isn't it?
Quite comedic, even the death of the bounty hunter is done with a comical twinkle.
It is,
Look at his shoes.
Yeah.
But this is like, shit, they've just absolutely obliterated...
That whole race of people.
Yeah, what's that, like 30 people on that bus?
Easily.
It's really, really horrible. Mm. And again, it just cements how good of a baddie Gavrok
is. Doesn't care.
Couldn't give a shit.
No.
Really, really good stuff. What is weird, though, because obviously that's not the cliffhanger. The cliffhanger is the Seventh Doctor turns up to rescue Mel and Burton.
Yeah.
With his white flag, his surrender flag.
Yeah.
And you have that really good confrontation
between the two. It's really good, yeah. And the dialogue's good.
Yeah, life, what do you know about life, Gavrok? Yeah. All that stuff is really, really good. We've obviously talked at length about how good Don Henderson is.
Mm.
Using his prop of the meat, spitting it out. I spit on your justice.
I think Silv's quite believable, isn't he, in that scene?
Well. I think
he delivers it well.
This story, you start to see more of his doctor as he would become later on.
Yes,
which is quite funny.
He's more comical, isn't he, and clownish, as you say. And now you see...
This one in particular, you really start to see that. And this is a very good indication of that in that moment.
Yeah.
Where he talks down the villain. Mm. Because he likes to play his mind games,
he
doesn't
does,
he?
Yeah.
It has echo, well, or I should say that the scene in Happiness Patrol when he talks to the snipers.
Yes.
Echoes this scene, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's funny, though, the cliffhanger of him, they're walking down the steps and then they hear the guns cock and he goes, I think I may have gone
a little too far.
Yeah, that's a good cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it acts as a bit of a fake out cliffhanger because.
It does. Then they just walk away.
They just walk away and get on the bike,
it's a
shame,
it's fine. Really.
Do we really think that, given what we've seen, do you think Gavrok would have really been the sort of person to withhold such treaties as the White Flag?
No, I don't think so.
No, I
think... In reality.
No, not at all.
No, if he's quite happy to kill the whole load of people on that bus...
Yeah.
I think he'd easily shoot those three people.
In the back.
Yeah. I wouldn't give a second. Yeah. I think he probably would have shot the doctor coming towards him on the bike.
Well, I was going to say, to quote Rimmer in Red Dwarf, I'd happily shoot him if he was on the job. So. that's a bit of a fake out, but it's fine.
Mm.
That is one of the least ridiculous things
in the
story.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we have... there's a bit of a run around, isn't there? You've got, what is the piece of music that Kef McCulloch references? Is it Flight of the Bumblebee?
Yes.
Which is very apt because we're going to have a lot about bees.
Yeah.
Really interesting. I like that stuff about how the Delta, with her like little things that are implants in her head,
yes,
she can pick up the frequency of the bees, because obviously bees talk to one another.
Yes.
So that's really clever. It's a bit of a weird thing that they do. It's a bit of a very camp carry-on type of slapstick.
Yeah.
With the honey, do you mean? Let's set up a trap with the honey.
Yeah.
And release the bees. Mm. Yeah, I mean,
it's not the greatest, is it? After the bit,
It's not the greatest. It's a bit dopey.
It's a bit silly. Yeah, I agree.
But actually, watching it, I thought the way that they did the bees actually didn't look too bad.
Didn't look too bad, did it? Really? Yeah.
No, you know, they looked bee-like. Yes. It wasn't like they just got little black dots.
No, they didn't. Just,
you know, they tried to make it.
Yeah.
But it is a bit strange.
Yeah.
And then, of course, they go back to... I watch that scene, and every time I see it, I think, all that nice honey is just going to waste.
I know, wrecked in that, yeah.
But, I guess.
That was the 80s.
That was the 80s. poor Garongwe, like, he's got all these honeys.
From the 20s.
Yeah.
I know, and probably before, and yeah.
And it's all been wasted. Yeah. Well, it's not wasted, I guess.
It helped.
It helped save the lives of Delta and her daughter.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
As a singer, what do you think of Delta's daughter's singing abilities?
Very impressive.
Very impressive.
Yeah, so some good high pitches there.
She can shatter the windows, of that place, the little house.
I said to you, we watched it. The only sad thing is, the thing doesn't make sense. It's obviously, she does those high pitches and the windows break, which is fine.
Yeah.
But then when they do that back at Shangri-La and he goes to the loudspeakers, the windows don't get... No. Obviously, they don't want to wreck the bloody Butlins, whatever it is.
The budget to smash
the windows. But technically, I suppose that should have happened.
That should have happened.
You know.
And I think that's a clever way of defeating the enemy.
The enemy. Yeah.
You've got her natural singing ability.
Yeah.
You've got that kind of rock and roll element for Billy because he's setting up his speakers, which he previously mentioned in part one about how strong they were.
He did,
At the dance. And poor old Gavrok gets atomised.
He does.
Because he's put the sonic cone thing as a booby trap in the TARDIS.
Which is a good idea, isn't it?
That's a cool idea. And he falls into his own trap. Hoist by his own petard, you might say.
To quote Patrick Troughton.
Is it?
Patrick Troughton says that, doesn't he?
Does he?
Yeah.
What story is that then?
Can't remember, but I know he says it.
Put your quote where your mouth is.
Yeah, hoist by his own petard. I'm sure he does.
He probably does. I was thinking. I think the Master says it as well. Antonini says it in a story.
Maybe
the King's Demon.
I thought Pat says it in something.
Possibly.
If you remember, put it in the comments.
Yeah, someone will.
I could be wrong, of course, but I'm vaguely thought Pat might have said that. I could be completely wrong.
Okay, well, someone will tell us. Someone will let us know. Yes, and then that's really it, isn't it? He gets blown up. Billy has...
The Bannermen are all...
Bannermen get tied up
get
with skipping
tied
ropes.
Up with skipping ropes, as you would.
And then poor Billy... Well, not poor Billy. He's been feeding himself...
Those little green capsules.
Syringes. Of, baby feed for the Shimmeron princess.
Mm.
And slowly turns himself into a Shimmeron.
Mm.
Yeah, a bit bonkers, isn't it, really?
It is, really, but that's what you do for love.
That's what you do for love, yeah. What is it the doctor says? I noted it. Love has never been known for its rationality.
Yeah.
That's a really nice quote.
Nice line, yeah.
And that's another scene, I think. Again, you start to see more of Syl's doctor coming through.
Yeah.
Because it's a more sorrowful, more reflective doctor.
The tone, isn't it?
The tone
in that
of
point,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they shoot off in their
they go off
really
in spaceship.
Good spaceship. The spaceship looks really good.
It looks all right,
stuff
isn't it?
When it's flying around and landing in the camp and stuff.
It's okay. So they go off.
They
and,
go
of course,
off.
Billy says to Ray, look after Vincent, the motorbike.
The good motorbike.
Which
he
does.
With the sidecar. We did laugh, however, that during the chase scene, Delta's in the sidecar.
And the child's on the back of the bike, not the other way around.
Yeah, it's like, well, put your daughter in the sidecar.
I know,
you'd have
thought
so. She'd be safe.
Yeah, a bit weird, that.
It is a bit weird. What also makes me laugh is that they get on the spaceship. Billy sits down in the chair and he goes, "Let's make this baby fly."
Yeah,
you know, and he thinks it's gonna take off like, whew. it's the slowest takeoff, and it's the like just oh okay. It's like I'm on the bus, you know. Yeah. And he's like, it doesn't have the energy.
Well, I suppose it's all alien to him, isn't it? Literally,
well, it is literally. Alien
he's trying to
him.
Work out this technology, which is completely yeah. alien to him. So it's going to take a little while.
True. I mean, he's not flying it. She's flying it, isn't she?
Is he not doing anything as well to help
out? I don't know what the bloody hell he's doing. Oh, okay, he's just sat there yeah, going
yeah.
like, ooh,
yeah, yeah.
Let's wait for it. But regardless, I mean, it's one of those stories where everything wraps up. Very nicely.
Yeah.
They go off. Ray gets her motorbike.
But not her love, of course. So that is
not
quite
her
sad.
Love. Burton's camp is fine. And he
Burton's
goes
camp, yes,
off.
Of course, because there's 1950s group. No, they won't
another
come along.
Coming
yeah,
along.
So they're going off. And the two Americans.
They get their satellites.
The doctor points out yeah. it's smashed into the sign or to the fence.
Yeah.
And they have that lovely ending, don't you, with Gromway
yeah.
looking at the camera or looking up and little wink.
Yeah, as the TARDIS disappears. Yeah.
Dematerializes. Yeah, it's lovely.
Which is why, I like that because his character feels like he's on a bit of another level,
yeah.
really. Like this is what I mean, where he feels sort
doctor-ish.
Of doctorish.
Yeah.
Because it's like he's not fazed by anything.
No.
You know, he's not fazed by aliens.
No,
he's
the
not...
two guys are shocked when they see the TARDIS.
Yeah.
But he isn't. He just
he
has
isn't.
This little,
you know. Yeah. He doesn't. Nothing bothers him.
No.
You know. Is he a curator? Is he a curator doctor?
He'd be good, wouldn't he?
He would be a good. You know, if the doctor could become the curator of the Undergallery, why not settle in 1950s Wales?
Yeah.
So there we go. Coming soon from Big Finish Productions.
Yeah.
The Gronway Adventures of Gronway. How to.
And his bees.
And his bees, yeah. And then that's it. That's the end.
That's
Mel
the
doesn't
end.
Really do an awful lot, does she, in that story?
She doesn't really, no. I suppose she doesn't.
She sort of plays second
much.
Fiddle.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm trying to think what she does. She doesn't do that much, does she?
She doesn't do that much. But, no. You know, it's a good romp.
Yeah.
There's a good bit of action across the whole story.
There
good
is.
Motorbike chases,
yeah.
You know, good use of location.
Yeah.
Good use of music, like we've already said.
Yeah.
Fantastic cast.
Mm. Yeah, very strong
other
cast.
Other than Delta.
Yeah, other than Delta.
But luckily she doesn't really say or do an awful lot.
She doesn't do
lot.
Much, does she? Yeah.
The cast are very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a really good, fun story. Mm. And it's really the sort of story that you could imagine... You can imagine it in like the Russell T Davies
era. The early era,
yes. You think
yeah.
this could be a story that Russell would be like, all right, you know.
Yeah.
Early on in this series, we'll have a little fun episode.
Yes.
And you know, it's not the first time Doctor Who has done holiday camp adventures because we had the Macra Terror.
Yeah.
That's set in the holiday camp.
Yeah.
Obviously, that is completely sinister and creepy.
Yes,
whereas
of course
this
it
is literally.
Jovial and lighthearted,
yeah.
isn't it? Yeah.
But yeah, it is. It's a good, fun story.
Yeah.
And
I've always enjoyed it.
I've always enjoyed it too. And I think it's interesting to see how people go with this story because Billy put out on Review of Death Twitter that we were going to be talking about this story.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd share some of people's thoughts.
Oh, go on then.
So we can see the. Oh, in fact, I've just clicked on to Twitter and Mester the Magnificent is actually watching Delta and the Bannerman as a bank holiday treat.
Oh.
How funny. And he currently says, one of my favourite Seventh Doctor stories. It certainly seems to have undergone something of a rehabilitation since the 1990s when received wisdom was that it was a real dud. And I completely agree. Mm. It's a fun little story.
Mm.
But let's see what other people have to say.
Interesting.
Because I had a quick look. I've had a sneaky peek already. I thought it was just interesting how some people really, really thought this is a great, fun story.
Oh, really?
And
oh,
other
okay.
people thought this is an absolute pile of shite.
Ah. Yeah.
So, lovely TARDIS monkey put a messy story, but all the good plot points to make a really fun and lighthearted. It's so Doctor Who to want to go to Disney, but end up at Barry Island.
Mm.
And it's a shame the plot is a bit lackluster, but it had its wonderful 1950s charm. Also, Ray is a wonderful character.
Mm.
I think that's
fair
really
enough,
good.
Yeah.
Andrews said, a glorious mess. The sitcom style of the production seemed at odds with the script, which has some pretty grim moments, which we obviously mentioned.
We mentioned.
Don Henderson is great and really dribbles threat and evil. Mm. The synth music was great at the time, but now it seems really dated and not in a nostalgic way. Fun and frothy in a strawberry milkshake sort of way, not to be taken too seriously. Mm. Yeah, I actually think the music works fine.
I like the music, yeah.
I'm a big fan of the music. Well. There's that really good bit of the Doctor Who theme that we noticed.
There's the bit of the theme, which is lovely.
One of the sort of beauty spots that they go to.
At the end of the scene, isn't it? Yeah. You hear it, yeah. The transition.
You know, it's a bit like his Latin remix.
Yeah.
Or the Batman March theme for Doctor Who action figure reviews.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Kev McCulloch hasn't come knocking on my door saying,
what are you doing?
Yeah. Sorry, Kev. Ricky of Khan from Sisterhood of Khan says the extended version of the Blu-ray set brings this story to glorious life, in my opinion. Yeah, we enjoyed the extended version.
We did, yes. We didn't watch it recently.
This time, no. We stuck to the televised version for this one. I mean, I can't really remember it adding an awful lot more to the story. It was really just extended shots and stuff.
Yes, I think so.
And Ken Dodd's
plot,
ridiculous over-the-top death.
Yeah.
Jamie Bates said pure joy. Deborah Jemington said, I loved Elton the Bannerman. The tone is really nice for me. It's the best of season 24 by far. Really enjoy it. An underrated gem, in my opinion.
So they're quite positive, really. Can you find any negative ones?
Arbiter of Canon said, doesn't need a reappraisal because it's a fucking banger. But Oliver Keith Carter says, I honestly think this is the worst story in the classic series. That is all. The worst story.
In the whole of classic Doctor Who.
Wow, that is quite a claim.
That is quite a
claim. I mean, I think Paradise Towers is much worse for the reasons that we've already stated.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, like I said, I did enjoy it more when we recently rewatched it.
Yeah.
But Richard Brier's being way too over the top.
Yes. But I think there are some other worse stories in classic Doctor Who in previous seasons.
Yeah?
Don't you think?
I mean, there's some shit ones, isn't there? Like, The Horns of Nymon. We watched that recently.
The Horns of Nymon's pretty bad, isn't it?
God, that's pretty awful.
Yeah.
That is pretty appalling. I mean, it's fun to laugh at, but as an actual bit of television, it's pretty poor.
Yeah, it's not great, is it?
Yeah, any other ones that really stick out in your mind as this is a shit Doctor Who story? Any that really make you long for death when you're watching it?
I'm sure there's a few Peter Davison ones.
Oh, dear.
Sorry, Annie. But, he's got a few boring ones, hasn't he?
He does, unfortunately. I mean, I know, again, sorry, Annie, because she really likes Enlightenment.
Yeah.
I find Enlightenment.
Well, there
we go. Quite dull.
Yeah, hardly Enlightenment. I mean, put you to sleepenment, but anyway.
Put you to sleepenment.
Anyway.
Anything from... Oh, my God, Timelash. Timelash is an absolute stinker.
Yeah, of course. That's worse than this one.
Oh, God, yeah, so much worse.
Well, this guy is saying this is the worst story in classic Doctor Who, so I'm trying to say...
That is, Timelash is appalling. But Timelash does have the Borad, who is very good.
He's a great character, yeah.
And Paul Darrow is ridiculously over the top.
He is, yeah.
But there's some really ropey acting. There's that woman in Timelash who... Whoever she is... The one who ends up like I really can't remember what that story is about. It's one of those stories that no matter how many times I've watched it, my brain just doesn't take in the plot.
No.
She's like ghosting her way through time. She ends up in H.G. Wells' house.
That one. Oh, yeah, yeah,
she
yeah.
She can't act.
No.
no offense.
that's a negative one. Any other negative ones?
Seventh Son put okay, second to bottom in season 24 for me, behind Rani. I think it's just too fluffy and sunny for my taste.
Ah, so he doesn't like all the jovial nature.
No.
Interesting.
And I like, that's actually something that I like. It feels, because it's one of those rare occasions where it's actually a very sunny shoot.
Mm.
And it really suits the tone of the story.
It feels like a
summer holiday Doctor Who.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why it's quite strange when you said...
It's in November.
Because this is the sort of Doctor Who that, again, if it was Russell T Davies, when Doctor Who was on in the spring into the beginning of summer...
It would be in that sort of time, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would have fit really well. It does feel like a proper summer holiday, bank holiday Doctor Who story.
Mm.
Draconian Menace said, oh, even in their bio, they put, I will defend Delta and the Bannerman to the death.
Oh, right.
Gloriously camp, often unfairly dismissed. It's an absolute blast from start to end. Okay, it's no Androzani remembrance, but there are a few serials I can honestly say I have more fun watching. The worst thing Doctor Who can be is boring, and it certainly isn't that, and it is peak Kef. And it is peak Kef McCulloch.
Yeah, it's a good review.
I want to see if there's... I mean, really, a lot of people are
quite
saying...
Positive,
it's really good.
That's good.
This person here, Joel Catherines. Years ago, I declared it the worst Doctor Who story. So another one. The Eternal Whiplash bothered me more than anything. And I seriously considered why I was still watching the show. At some point, I'll revisit it for re-evaluation. Because anything that bonkers has to have something going for it. Interesting.
Mm.
So that was, I guess, like at the time watching it. That they were like, oh, this is it for me. Risk averse put, I remember watching it when it first came out and thinking that it was by a mile the worst Doctor Who story of all time. And I stick by that view.
Wow.
Tonally bizarre, nonsensical, childish pantomime, and I hated it. Doesn't count as real Doctor Who.
Bum, bum, bum. It does.
Oh, and then someone else agreed by saying, yes, the whole eating alien food turns a human into an alien subplot as well. Good grief. Kendrick said, I hate it.
Interesting.
A few other people have said, you know, they've gone back to it and enjoyed it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that extremely harsh comment about it being, whatever, I forget.
The one that just said that it was just a tonally bizarre, nonsensical, childish.
I don't think it's a nonsensical story.
I mean, all right, maybe the eating alien food turning you into an alien is a bit of a stretch.
All right.
But... you know, is it any more bizarre than some of the other mad stuff that happens in Doctor Who?
Probably not.
No.
Especially in modern Doctor Who.
It's quite a divisive story, but I'm pleasantly surprised to see how many people
the positives,
have said,
yeah,
actually, really like it, it's good fun. And it is.
Well, we enjoyed it, didn't we?
We enjoyed it. I had a good time watching it with you when we watched it the other day.
Yeah,
so if you haven't seen it, and we've completely spoiled the story for you, I do apologise, but, you know, go and give it a watch. And if it's one of those stories where you think, oh, you know, I don't really feel it.
Yeah.
Give
it another go.
Yeah, I think it's one that is worthy of a reappraisal. And I think, yeah, coming out of some of the modern Doctor Who stories, which can be quite camp and ridiculous, you know, I don't think
it's any worse than
say something like Love and Monsters, which is obviously camp and ridiculous.
I hate that story.
I know you hate that story.
Yeah.
Sorry, Annie, who also likes that story.
Sorry, Annie.
There we go. So there we go. That was Delta and the Bannerman, and it was good fun. And thank you, Jonathan, for coming in dressed up as Sylvester McCoy.
That's fine.
It's My always pleasure. A treat to see you dressed up like that.
Shall I stand up and give the viewers a
Go on.
A twirl.
Give them a twirl.
Shall I? Will they be able to see?
Sorry, I've been
sat on my good hanky, have you?
Yeah. Sorry. If I'd have farted on it, that would have been even more atrocious, wouldn't it?
It would have been atrocious, yeah. Poor Sylv. There we go. Shall I stand over here? Will people be able to see my...
If you stand over there, yeah, that camera should be able to see
will it get
you.
My shoes?
It'll get your shoes.
Or will it get the...
It should do it. If I just move that table back a bit, there you are.
There we go.
There you are, the full McCoy.
Full McCoy. There we go.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
Good stuff. Yeah.
We'll have to get you at a convention, walking around, so people can say, can I have a photo, please?
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
Well, maybe the security will say, can you get out?
Very possibly.
Very possibly. Yes, thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching. As ever, you know, if you're enjoying this, tell your friends, tell your buddies.
And if you're not, don't worry, I won't be here next week. Billy's back, so
Billy's
it's fine.
Back next time. We're not sure what we're going to be doing next. We've got a few things in the pipeline. It could be something season 18 oriented. It could be something else. We don't know. We have to find out. But Billy will be back in a fortnight. And thank you, Johnny, for coming along.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me for the last 2 weeks.
It's been great. It's been good fun. And thank you all for watching. Thank you all for listening. Tell your friends, like, subscribe, share it, all that kind of stuff. And see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.